How long have you been? I can start. Hi. Hey, welcome to the Comedy Club podcast. I'm Dustin Kaufman, here with very funny Nick Thune. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I love your work. I love when you come back. I like, you know, just you bring something different, and I'm definitely a fan of that.
So, well, thank you.
Yeah. How long have you been using the tobacco?
Well, this is nicotine.
It's just nicotine. It's just there's a nicotine pouch.
No tobacco pouch. In it. But I've been on a nicotine of some sort since I was 14, probably.
When did you convert to? Do you still smoke on occasion?
No. How I haven't smoked since the pandemic, actually.
What a wild time to start.
I know. I got sick right before COVID hit, you know, like a lot of people probably did, and probably was COVID. Who knows? But. And it was so bad that I didn't smoke for a week and a half. And then I just thought, why not?
Oh, my God.
Keep that going. Because, you know, when you're really sick, you don't want.
How long did you smoke for?
I mean, 20 some years.
That's a lot. Yeah. I'm at that point where I'm like, should find a way to. I mean, I hand roll an organic tobacco and I add a little cotton filter.
I used to do that. Yeah.
Like it is not like a tip. It's like an actual. It's like I actually put like a cotton.
Yeah. No, I know. Can I roll you one?
Oh, yeah. Please do.
It's been a while. I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to start rolling so that way it's harder to smoke. And then turns out, not at all.
No.
Turns out you just learn how to roll really good.
So I started doing this when I was in New York. Mm-hmm. And it was like. The corner store was like $13 a pack, or $13 for this pouch. And I'm like, well, let me try that pouch. And then like it took 2 days, and I'm like, my mouth is like, Jesus, this is a lot. So I went out like, do you like filters or something? Like, can I put a filter in this?
Oh, yeah.
They're like, yeah, we have this bag of filter. And I just stuck. I ended up switched to the organic, and
that's why I like Bali Shag a little bit, because. It's a little bit more damp. So to me, it was easier to roll.
To roll?
Yeah. It's not as tight as it could be, but hey.
That's okay. I'm going to smoke it. If you don't mind.
No.
You rolled it for me. It's like a gift.
Might as well, yeah.
I'm going to smoke your gift. I like to roast the tip. It makes me think of it's like a cigar or something. And I do think it burns a little more consistently if you just hit the tip just a little bit before you.
Well, because part of smoking joints to me was like, I would give it a heavy lick so that it would smoke slower.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did that
a heavy
work?
Lick.
Did that, I mean, it's just got to be really sticky, and then it burns really slow.
Yeah. I mean, the types of joints that I used to roll, I used to roll seeds. I used to roll everything. And then you get the really damp stuff where you're like, you can't even, it's not even smoking. It's like too damp.
Did you guys ever try to roll, you and your friends ever try to roll the, like the cross joints or X's or
stupid stuff.
I just always enjoyed like how big can we make this?
Because
it was just cheap for large, crazy amounts of it. You're like, let's just, and then you're like, this Friday, we're going to get paid and we're going to buy this and we're going to roll it all up into one big ass joint.
But see, I never liked to smoke weed like that. I like to smoke like a hit or two hits.
Yeah.
And then, like, just feel good.
That's closer to where I am now.
I remember when I used to buy, I don't do any drugs anymore, but I used to buy weed on the road, and I used to get, like, Doug Benson was the guy, obviously. They could just give you a hookup in any city. And all of the hookups he gave you were people that are fans of Doug.
Yeah.
People that smoke weed, like, that's their job. And they'd show up and be like, let's smoke one together. And they're like, have a spliff. And you're like, yeah, I'm probably not going to be able to finish that spliff with you. And they're like, well, I thought you were like a Doug Benson. I'm like, no, I just want
to get high,
man. I'm just trying to be cool, you know? I'm not trying to like get worried.
I'm at the point now, like I just busy, you know, like, so I won't, there's times like I won't smoke for days now. And then then I feel like very unfocused. I'm like struggling to like get work done and pay attention. I'm like, need to smoke a little weed.
Oh, weed, yeah.
Yeah. And so and then that helps me with that a lot.
Do you vape?
No. I mean, I will when I'm traveling, for sure.
Yeah, vaping was like the, when that came about.
Definitely not in casinos, but vaping. Yeah, like if I'm in a situation, if I'm going somewhere where I'm like, you probably can't smoke bowls and smoke joints and stuff, I might take a little vape.
And it's made, and nothing's easier. I mean, I used to have to fly with weed. I used to have to go to the grocery store, buy a turkey basting bag, an oven bag, wrap it really tight, burn it, seal it. And then I found this underwear. American Apparel had underwear.
The story would go a whole different direction if you would have said turkey baster. Like,
baste it right up.
You
there.
Really wanted to get it on the plane.
I mean, it was. It came to that. I mean, it was basically, yeah. It was basically there because I was in the, I found underwear that had a hole, like a crotch, but then it went all the way under. So I would put it, double-sided tape around it and put it down all the way.
I was coming back from Vegas a year ago and they, I'm like a random search. It's long story. They search my shit, right? And they find marijuana clearly marked, like from the dispensary. And she goes, and she's like, she calls over her guy. The supervisor, and she's like, what do we do with this? He goes, nothing. And they just put it back, zipped up my suitcase, and I was on my way. They didn't even take it.
That's nice.
That's where it is now, especially if you're going from a legal state to a legal state.
Yeah.
There's the pressure just isn't there. I mean, the dogs are trained for bombs and cocaine, I think. Like, nobody's looking for marijuana at the airport.
No one's ever been looking for it.
If you're high, you're quiet. That's what they want.
Unless you're doing edibles. People can trip out on that stuff.
I'll give you that.
I tripped out on a plane once on edibles.
We had somebody take edibles. Like, it's weird. Like,
but this is back when edibles were not a science. This was like you take one, you don't know what's. They mark it by like X's.
We tried to have an infused beer here that you know our distributor was. I think I had it for like 3 weeks and I took it off. Because in 3 weeks, I had two separate people, like, have, like, severe, like pass out almost. Like, yeah. Like near, because of that and maybe, both of them, both cases, they brought the party with them. Mm-hmm. They came drunk. You know what I mean? They came, but both cases, mixing that with it, it didn't end well. I don't want to put my customers in that situation. I don't want that liability.
It hits different, too. It hits quicker.
Yeah,
liquid,
and is I don't even drink. I you know, like, it's not like I don't go to meetings. I hate being drunk anymore. I don't want to be drunk. I don't like the taste of a lot of alcohol.
It's not attractive.
If I order a beer at dinner, I'll order it before, and it's been so long since I have. But I noticed the pattern is that I would order a beer, and whatever I hadn't drank by the time my food came would probably just not. Get drunk because I was like done with it at that point. Mm-hmm. Just like a little appetizer or something.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, I don't want it.
It's filling. Why do you need another thing that's filling?
But I own bars and I love and support marijuana and I like what it does for me. But like as a comic, I'm like, I'd rather give me alcohol. Give me people who are drinking all day.
Until they get to that point. Yeah.
Sure. But I think that middle is, just more energetic.
Yeah, like the crowd tonight, the early crowd. We'll see what the late crowd's like. Late Friday, you never know. But
man, you know,
drunk.
You know, I have a theory to end Late Show Friday. Mm-hmm. Not to end having a late show, but to fix the problem and to eliminate that. And it's move the show times earlier. Mm-hmm. And that's been debated so much. And I think, like, we're 7 and 9:30. It used to be 8 and 10. We're 7 and 9:30 now. When we can, we do 6 and 8:30 on Saturdays, and we have so much luck with that. But we've experimented 6 and 8:30 on Fridays, and it's so good. It's so good. And I think the theory was people work, you know, they don't have time to come to like a 6 o'clock show, yada yada yada. I honestly think that the workforce is not what it was 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Not everybody's working Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 jobs.
Or from a building.
They're working from home. They're on their own schedule.
Yeah. But some of them are prostitutes. They're drug dealers.
And they just want to go see a show. They don't care what time. They need to go to an early show because they got drugs to
do.
They're
on all the time, really.
But then the people who do work till 5, that 8:30 becomes way more attractive than 9:30. Mm-hmm. They're not nearly as drunk when they show up. They haven't had time to drink as much.
And in general, a lot of clubs are doing that.
The earlier?
Yeah. I do feel like the Friday late shows, I feel like it's not, I feel like now it's the early Saturday show is becoming the problem.
Really?
That's always been like the easy show. Everyone thinks like, oh, it's going to be loaded. And it's just kind of medium, I think. Like,
do you think customers on the early shows at clubs mm-hmm. come with a different expectation as a whole, even if they're not aware of it?
Yeah. Like, I do. I mean, I think because they haven't lived a whole night yet, you know, like
interesting.
People's day is they've like lived through like it turning dark outside. It's like they kind of turn a little bit into a werewolf, you know, they're like, this is different. We're out,
the show goes
we're
on
feeding now. We're like out looking for something. Whereas like early, it's like, hey, we'll get this out of the way. Early night at home. Nice.
That's what a lot of people want though. They want to come out and then just be home early.
Yeah.
So much more. Like, especially, I don't know, like bigger cities and stuff. I'm not sure. I know here in Kansas City, it does feel that the earlier you're doing stuff, the better it's.
Yeah.
The more people want to do it.
I think generally.
Like when we switched from 7 and 9:30 to 6 and 8:30, we didn't just move some people from the early show to the late show. We sold the same amount for the early show and sold way more for the late show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is massive. Yeah. Like as a rule, this is fantastic.
Why aren't you doing it this weekend?
Well, because this show was booked out a long time ago and it's been a slow transition to where we started doing them on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're now going to go to Fridays as well.
Is tomorrow 6 and 8:30?
No, this show was booked a while back, and then there was tickets pre-sold and we didn't want to start moving everybody.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Things that were, we left in place, mm-hmm. Lawrence, we went through and changed the whole calendar. We're like, it is night and day in mm-hmm. our Lawrence club. We just said what shows are left at 7 and 9:30, change the weekend and call them. Just it's so night and day.
Crazy
that in those 9:30 shows were just like hurting.
I remember the places like in Atlanta used to have a three show Saturday.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh my god, like a midnight show, and you're just like, what?
What's the most shows you've ever done in a week as a performer, like in a club week?
Oh, in a club weekend?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Probably Vegas. Would that be Vegas?
Yeah, Vegas. Yeah, Vegas is what, like you do 10 or 8 or something like that?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really start to kind of forget what show is what. You halfway through, you're telling a joke and you're thinking, did I tell this one? Because it seems like the same people that heard it last time. You really get lost in it. But as far as most sets I've ever done in a week, I've done
is like that hard after a certain amount of shows? You're just like, What do we do? Yeah, it does kind of blend together.
The fun thing about Vegas, though, is, and at least at certain places, they run it like a show, like stage. You're by the stage 5 minutes early. They've got somebody escorting you there. Like it's on a clock. You can't go over. You have to like it's fun. It's fun to kind of be involved in what seems like a big production.
Yeah.
Rather than like, hey, we're gonna start 15 minutes late. Is that fine with you?
Sure.
You know,
I think maybe for me in a club, I want to give shout out to Greg Warren with his 14 shows here. But for me, it was very early on opening for like Larry the Cable Guy
mm-hmm.
on his last club tour at Stanford's in Westport. And like that was like 2000, probably 99, 2000, something, probably about 2000. And a normal club week back then would be like one Wednesday, one Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday, and a Sunday. And that was like so many things now are like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or just Friday, Saturday even. But
yeah.
So Larry had two Wednesday, two Thursday, three Friday, three Saturday, and two Sunday. And every single show was just wall to fucking wall.
Crazy.
Yeah. I didn't know that was, I was excited. I got to work with him back then. I mean, I don't think anybody knew that was the last time he'd be doing that club or that he would just explode from there. But
it's crazy. I met him for the first time, only time, a couple months ago. I had a good time with him.
Good, pleasant experience.
Yeah.
I was so green at the time, and he was like bouncing one-liners off me in the green room office, whatever. And I'm like, how the fuck do I know? I'm a terrible. You shouldn't even be on this show. What are we?
Yeah. I wonder how long had he been Larry the Cable Guy up? Like,
oh, he was, that was, that so, it was not Dan Whitney. It was Larry.
Yeah. But I wonder how long.
Several years. Yeah. Because he built that doing call-ins on radio stations.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when radio, you could do that. That whole character was defined doing call-ins to, and he was really popular on Johnny Dare and stuff here. And so he had done that Stanford's Westport Club multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. He told me the whole story about the first night that he was Larry the Cable Guy on stage.
Wow.
Just that it changed everything.
How I felt the first time I went out and did an actual like multimedia performance on a stand-up stage, when I did more than just stood there with a microphone. Mm-hmm. I was like, part of me felt like, man, this is a cheat code, but the other part of me was like, this is so much fun.
Yeah,
you know, like to change it a little bit. And it's like, so yeah, like that feeling of like, yeah, this is what we should be doing it's a really fun feeling to have.
It is. It's weird too, because it's a lot of my career. I was like trying to say like, no, I'm regular stand up. I do, you know, like, and I even did an hour without the guitar. And the thing about it is in the end, like, why was I fighting the thing that I'm good at and love doing? Just to impress like the naysayers that are just comedians that are just angry or jealous for whatever reason, you know, like
nobody
was successful was ever like, why are you doing that? They're like, oh, this is great. And people that are angry were like, yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
Such fun stories with the music and stuff. It's,
yeah,
dude, you take people on a journey.
I like it.
I agree with that. I like it too.
But I fought it for a while. You know,
because like, were you like, why did you fight it? I guess, were you battling yourself over like, should I be doing this or like, believing?
So that I could tell Marc Maron I did an hour without a guitar sort of a thing, you know, like
really?
Someone like that, or, you know, really just to prove to myself even that I could do it, I guess, because there is a thing about being alone with a microphone on stage. And when I first started, I would say that was my weakest part of my performance. Whenever I put the guitar down, I didn't know what to do. I was just like, you know, and it was just like, give me the, I would just grab it again. And like, and now I don't mind. It's great. And it works and it's fine. And it like it can go back and forth. And sometimes I do more, sometimes I do less, just, you know.
So like you tell yourself like, this has to work. Whatever I do with the guitar has to work without it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that happened. I broke my arm. And so I had to do like 6 weeks of a tour without playing guitar. And so I figured out how to do it. It was coming at it from a different perspective. You know, I mean, my son gave a speech at school today.
Yeah.
And we were going over his intro over and over. And it was about, you know, he's giving the speech as if he's Alexander the Great. And I was just telling him, like, listen, you control the whole room by how you start. And it's the same way when you start in stand up and you watch people walk up. If they get into it too fast, I don't think they're going to do that great. It's not, you're too eager. You're letting them control you. You're basically saying like, oh, I can't handle silence, I better start. Whereas if you actually let it be silent, they immediately look at you and think, oh, he's in control. This is his room. He'll talk when he's ready. And if you do that, they'll listen.
I was told recently that the son of a popular radio personality has started doing our open mics.
Oh, yeah?
And my first thought was, I hope he takes his time.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you have a little bit of like, ooh, you know, people are going to want to, there was another former on-air personality who did comedy about 10, 12 years ago, right? Very nice guy, decently funny, right? Mm-hmm. Promoted, had a name. So everybody, because who he was, wanted to put him on all the shows and have him do everything and do way more time than he was able to do. And like, I think that probably in the long, and he hasn't done it in a long time, right? And I think that probably the way he was pulled in by the community at that time and was to may have hurt him in the long run. So it's like, let's let this kid simmer. It was the thought that I have, which, you know, just to go off
the same
not being
thing too
funny too quick.
TikTok and Instagram, and, you know, you can immediately get followers by having a filmed open mic set that is a joke that works. Yeah. You know, you can get followers. But beyond that, you can't get anything. You know, it's not going to. The best advice I ever got, and this is before, anything that was instant, like social media. But when I moved from Seattle to LA, I met with this casting director, and she said the best advice for actors, for anybody, is to stay under the radar as long as possible, because all you're doing is growing and no one's seeing it. And the second that you put yourself out there to be seen, that's who you are. And that's what they see. And so I did that. I did a whole year in LA, just like 500 sets, open mics. Not one time at the Improv, not one time tried to go up at the Comedy Store, never went into those buildings. And then I got invited to do a set at the Improv, somebody like a produced show. I did the set, crushed, because I had been crushing in shit rooms, you know?
Yeah.
And then I walked off the stage, the manager was right there. I mean, it was like a movie. I walked off, he shook my hand, he said, "You're a regular."
That quick?
That quick. One set. Because I stayed under the radar. Now, if he had seen me working at out open mics for the last year.
How long had you been in LA? A year?
At that point?
Yeah. How long had you been? Yeah.
At that point, a year and a half.
Okay. And you were doing your guitar then?
Yeah.
And you took your guitar on stage then?
Yeah.
Do you remember like getting asked by the producer to do that show?
Yeah. Steve Hofstetter.
Oh, is that who it was? Yeah. Okay. Was it a Wednesday, a Thursday?
It was a Friday.
Friday night, main room, not the lab.
Yeah, main room. And here's the other, there's actually another thing that happened that night too, which was, I think, God, I can't remember who.
Was it the early show or late show?
Early show.
Okay, so it's like the prime.
Yeah.
I'm on the 7 o'clock.
And it was before, so the Aspen Comedy Festival was still happening.
Yeah.
And somebody was there taping. Gary Goldman was, okay. I hadn't met Gary. I don't think
I met
him.
Did you know he was going to be there?
No, but he did a spot on the show to be seen by the Aspen people.
Okay.
And they filmed his set, but they filmed my set too right after him. And after I did that set, the next 2 days, whatever, on a Monday, my phone is just full. And I like start looking at all these numbers, and it's CAA, it's 3Arts, it's UTA, every agency, William Morris. And also the Aspen Comedy Festival people saying, "We saw your tape. We want you to come. We want you to be a new face at the festival." So like that one set that I had waited under the radar to do got me way more than just being a regular, you know, like I was made for that set and it did everything. I got seen all that same moment. I had a manager, I had an agent. I went to Aspen.
That's incredible.
I got a Comedy Central deal all off that one set. It was just like magic. I had to back it up though. I had 45 minutes of material.
Do you remember how long had you been doing comedy before you moved to LA?
2 years, like okay. On and off.
Do you remember the feeling you got when Steve asked you to do that Friday night, 7 o'clock show at the Improv?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I couldn't believe it. And I even thought maybe I shouldn't do it. Thought maybe I'm not ready yet, you know? But and I thought it's a produced show. It's not like a regular show. It's like whatever. And I'm so glad I did.
Just crushed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wearing a red jacket. I remember that. And I remember that there was a DVD going around. My managers told me they called it. It was being called the Red Jacket Set. And that even some manager fired his assistant because he didn't know about me.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What is that about?
These assistants are supposed to be out there. They're like, how did you not know who this guy is? That's how under the radar I kept. Like, even the kids that are supposed to go out for the managers and spot young comedians.
Sir, it's not their fault. Please don't fire them. Well, I don't want to sign with you. This is how you treat your employees.
I found that out way later.
Yeah. Is that who signed?
Wasn't who I signed with.
No. Okay. Thank God.
I think it's because I didn't sign with the other person that he fired the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny.
It was wild. And I had no idea. I didn't know what managers were, agents were. I didn't know anything. You know, still don't.
Boy, I'm glad you had that set.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah. I remember telling Mark Maron about that on his podcast, and he was just like, God damn it. Because my manager was Mark Maron's manager, or had just, Mark had just fired him, I think.
Yeah.
And Mark wasn't doing his podcast yet or anything. And I remember he introduced me to Mark at the improv, and you could just see loathe, you know. And now Mark and I mean, we text, we're friends.
So that's what you meant when you're like, I just wanted to tell Mark Maron I did it with that Fern.
Yeah, because I always wanted his approval. That's the thing, is that I wanted him, because I saw him as a real comedian. I saw him as somebody that, like,
yeah,
was in the shit. Like, he went to Vietnam, kind of a thing, you know?
A mentor? Just somebody you really respected.
Yeah, and my material's nothing like his. I don't have the same style or anything, but I just was like, yeah. And then he did the whole podcast thing, which was like, you know, I mean, I knew he was on the radio before that, but yeah, that was like that respect.
Well, I'm going to give you lots of respect for coming up and doing and sitting down with me up here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we have.
We could just power through the second show. We don't have to do it.
We just talk up here. Like, we can just send a mic, live feed. Where can people find you?
Los Angeles. Fine. When I'm not on the road. Arby's.com and.
Stay away from the roast beef.
Yeah. Instant Messenger.
Fine.
No, Instagram. What's just your Nick Thune.
What's at Nick Thune?
I'm just Nick Thune over the board. There was another Nick Thune, but I've ruined his life. He's got underscores and everything.
I have a lot of respect for you. I love your art. You bring an art to the stage. Again, I'm always excited to when I get to see you perform and stuff. So
thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. All right. Follow Nick Thune. Follow the Comedy Club.
I forgot that I actually had my own camera. I was like, yeah.
just at the Comedy Club, KC. Mm-hmm. Or LFK. Go see us in Lawrence as well. See Nick Thune on the road. And check out, we have a new house podcast as well, the Comedy Club House Podcast. It's just myself with a couple, with our manager, Sean from Lawrence, and Jeremy from social media. And we're going to release the first episode actually here next week. Fun. And it's all cut up, and it's so funny. It's a blast. I mean, nice. These guys are just the funniest, man. It's just fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm excited to be able to bring something more to extend to this, to tag on to what we're doing and expand from the club and stuff. So yeah.
That's great.
And just really truly original content from the club for the people and stuff. Just something different.
People behind a local club, that's what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. So look out, agents. We're gonna talk about you. No, we're not. Goodbye.